the difference between the first answer and the second answer, okay? In other words, how does the difference between the first person and the second person, how do they relate differently to the tzaddik, okay? The difference is totally in your personality. In the first one, you are a selfish person, but you are intelligently selfish, okay? The second one is because you are relate to universals, so then you relate to the tzaddik by virtue of his relationship to the city, because he relates to the universals. It's like the friendship of King David and Jonathan. That there was a friendship, according to Pirkei Avos, that it was beyond, you know what I mean? It was a non-selfish friendship. What does it mean, non-selfish? It means that the friendship was based, that they both had the same universals, and they recognized the person. In other words, in the first half, in the first one, I recognize what's beneficial to me. In the second one, I recognize the universals of that person. I relate to that person because of the way he relates to the city, the way he relates to justice and his kindness and all his actions, so I relate to him. You see, in the first one, I see the benefit of his actions. In the second one, I relate to him as, because he relates to universals, so I relate to him through his universals. The question is, how am I defining universals insofar as Musar is concerned? An emotional person, when he doesn't act, so he has a certain feeling towards that particular object which he relates to. In other words, like this. If a friend does something wrong, he seems to excuse it. If somebody he doesn't like does the same action, he condemns him. So it's a certain feeling that he feels towards a friend over another person. You see? That's the fool, okay? That's what King Solomon will call a fool, okay? But however, the chacham, he sees the benefit of being consistent and saying, look, I cannot relate to evil, right? Because that I see is harmful. So therefore, I must define, is this an evil act? And it will not make a difference who the person is. Well, let's say, for instance, I see consequences. So many times we overlook the consequence, like a person has certain consequences, we feel sorry for them. Another person, he has consequences, you say, see, he did this act, he deserves it. It's not, you must look at it consistently based on your ideas, not on the way you feel about it. Right. When I'm talking about ideas, one of the difficulties is that we do not relate to things through ideas. We are basically selfish. So we can understand the level of the Chacham, where the Chacham relates, he's a selfish person, but he sees that it's beneficial to live an intelligent life. Our difficulty with the person, the second level that relates to universals, that we're not experiencing that. We're on the first level. So it's very hard to identify with a person that doesn't relate to a selfishness. He just relates to universals. That is the difficulty of trying to explain the second half, is because I'm trying to show you something in your mind that's something you can't emotionally identify with. You understand? That is the difficulty. I'm just saying there is such a person that relates. He's totally guided by the universals and not by his selfish motives. It has nothing to do with success or failure. It has to do that he must live by a certain system. So now, Pasuk, what he's happy with, the second person, what the second person is happy with. With the universal is what he's happy with, is that the tzaddik relates to a system and benefits the system based on logic. So therefore, he relates to the system, not to himself, to self-benefit, but because he enjoys that the system is working correctly. But when he sees the destruction of the wicked, so he's happy that the system is not being destroyed, that there's somebody there not destroying the system. So he is happy that the system is benefiting because he relates to the system. Insofar as, let's say, for instance, he would see a tzaddik help an individual, you see, because since he sees that in a system, there are always two types of situations in a system. There's a situation of justice, and there's a situation of kindness. And he relates to both these systems. Okay, there are other psukim that discuss the difference in the nature of the person that relates to justice is the person that relates to kindness. So when he relates to the individual, he's relating to the individual through the system. In other words, the first guy would be kind to a person because he sees it's beneficial to him, to himself. Here he relates to him because he sees that the system demands that he should help this person. And the system causes him to operate and to relate to the particular person. In other words, who you should be helpful to is also, like, for instance, like he says over here, you should hate the Russia, and even though it says the pasuk that you should not hate your brother in your heart, it says, but a wicked person is not your brother. So therefore, I mean, who's my brother emotionally is very different than who's my brother logically. So I have to understand what defines a Russia, and who I should, and therefore once I see that idea, if I relate to universal, so then I would hate that person automatically, because the universal, if I'm on the level of relating to universal, so once my mind sees that this particular person is a Russia, then I'll relate to him as a Russia. But if I see a person is in trouble and he's not a Russia, so then I say, no, he's my brother, so therefore I must help him. Whatever the definition of that is. The pasuk, insofar as the pasuk is concerned, it doesn't have an opposite. But there is an opposite implied in the pasuk. If I don't like the tzaddik, and I like the Russia, because the Russia will tell me to be, allow me to, he's the license for me to live my desires. While the tzaddik goes against my desires, right? So therefore, then the pasuk, according to the pasuk, according to that, those two opposites, the question is, what is the subject of the pasuk? In other words, the subject is there's two ways to look at a tzaddik and a rasha. See? There's two ways of looking at a tzaddik. When you look at a tzaddik and a rasha, there's two ways. One is, you see that the tzaddik hinders you, and the wicked person gives you license, you see. So therefore, you're happy when the tzaddik is gone and the wicked person is successful. But however, the other way of looking at them is that you look at the tzaddik, that he's the beneficial, and the rasha is the harm. So therefore, there's two different ways of looking at the tzaddik and the rasha. And insofar as the two answers are concerned, of the two answers of the Rabbeinu Yonah, he's talking about the how two levels of looking at the tzaddik and the rasha correctly. There are two different levels of looking at them. There's two levels in the person that's observing the tzaddik and the rasha, that the tzaddik is successful and the rasha fails. There's two levels of seeing the correct view. They're both seeing the correct view, but there's two different levels of viewing it, you see? Well, insofar as the pasuk is concerned, the pasuk itself, the pasuk is saying that there's two ways of looking at the tzaddik and the rasha altogether. That the wicked person, a person that's a fool, he looks at the tzaddik that he's hindering him in all his desires, because he's telling you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. We should do things that you don't feel like doing, while the rasha gives into your base desires. So you say, hey, that's I'm happy with that. So I'm happy with the rasha, and I'm sorry about that, the tzaddik. is successful. But if you have the correct view, so then you are happy when the tzaddik is successful and the Russia is a failure.
Okay, we're up to verse 11. It says, with the blessing of the Yosha. Yosha, we said, was the straightforward, clear thinker, lover of learning. The city will be raised. With the mouth of the wicked, it will be destroyed. When the Yosha, the one that loves learning, is blessed, you see, then with the blessings of the Yosha, the city is raised or exalted. And with the mouth of the wicked, it is destroyed. I will read the Rabbeinu Yonah. He says, when the Yosha is successful with wealth and honor, then the city is raised, the state, Medina, it says Medina, the city or state is raised, it goes up, or exalted, it's benefited. Because the Yosha draws the hearts of people with their wisdom, it's talking about the wisdom of the Yosha, and the advises them with counsel and advice and knowledge, because the Yesharim, they are intelligent, they have good mind, and very straight in their thinking, the way we explained, and their success with wealth and honor, right, then their words are listened to. Alright, that's the first half of the verse. The second half of the verse, he says, with the mouth of the wicked is destroyed, with rechilus. Rechilus is like gossip, right? The sichsuch. Sichsuch is incites or instigates. Okay? And he sends quarrels. I mean, he gets involved in quarrels and strife. He causes, I guess the best way to translate, he causes quarrels and strife. And he strengthens falseness, well, or lies, and he brings down the truth. That's one explanation of both verses. The second explanation, it's possible to explain that when it says the blessing of the Yosha, it means the prayers and their blessings, which is acceptable and by God. Because, like, he brings the pasuk that the prayers of the Yosha are accepted by God, and the mouth of the wicked is destroyed, and the mouth of the wicked destroys. So he says the righteous raise up with the blessing with their mouth, and the Rishoim with their mouth they destroy. Okay, so the Rabbeinu Yonah has two explanations. We'll take one at a time. The first answer he says is that by blessing he means that the Yosha is blessed with success, because his success with wealth and honor will bring people to listen to what he has to say. Okay? While the mouth of the wicked, they destroy the city, you see, he says that that's because they're interested in just gossip and putting people down and destroying people and inciting, they're happy when there's an argument, inciting strife and causing basically destruction. They're not interested in building, they're really interested in destroying. In the first answer, by blessed, he means successful. And he said clearly, the Rabbeinu Yonah says clearly that the Yosha is successful in wealth and honor. That's what it means. By the blessing of the Yosha means the Yosha himself is blessed with wealth and honor. That is a good thing. In other words, the Rabbeinu Yonah is saying that people will listen to his advice because he has prominence and is accepted, because in the world of in the public, They don't understand ideas. They don't see the value of it, but they respect success. Okay, right. So since they respect success, so therefore, if the yosher has a wealth and honor, he will be listened to, and that will benefit the city. Right. The question that we have to answer is. I can understand the advice of the, in other words, what the tzaddik talks about and advises is opposite than what the wicked person says. So that would be a comparison. But the subject in the first half seems to be the blessing of the yosha. In other words, the blessing of the yosha means that it's the wealth and prominence, his wealth and honor and prominence, is that the people accept him. So therefore, that should be the subject. Why is the subject his advice? The people wouldn't accept his advice inherently. In other words, the wicked somehow they accept his advice inherently. Here they don't accept his advice inherently. You need some outside, something outside his advice, something that has nothing to do with his advice. That they accept him for that, so then they listen to his advice, which seems to be a different point than what the second half is saying. You see what I mean? In other words, the question is, what is the subject here? In other words, what is the comparison between the first half and the second half? In other words, I think we all understand the Rabbeinu Yonah, clearly what he is saying, and the nature of people. But our problem with the Rabbeinu Yonah is a logical problem. What's the logic? Because every verse is a comparison between, or the difference in one subject between the righteous and the wicked, or the fool and the wise. Okay? Now the question is, what does his wealth and honor have to do with what the wicked is saying? Now, if you tell me that his advice is that the opposite is the advice of the righteous, right, and the gossip or insightfulness of the wicked, you see, that I could understand. But the first half seems to emphasize the words in the verse seems to emphasize it, that the blessing of the yosher causes the city to be raised. Now, the Rabbeinu Yonah says if he's blessed with wealth, and how does that help? So he says because they'll listen to him. But if I had to say what's the essence of the pasuk, is that we're talking about his success in wealth and honor, and that he gains prominence that people will listen. You see? So how is that the opposite of the insightfulness? How he incites and pushes quarrels and the strife of the wicked. In other words, if the essence of the pasuk was what the tzaddik says and what the rasha says, then I would understand we have one subject. You see? Then I understand we have one subject. But however, with the essence of the first half of the pasuk seems to be emphasizing the idea of a success that the public could accept and recognize that he's a prominent person based on his success in things that they hold are important. Not in his essence, what he really has to offer. But because of that, they will accept what he has to offer. That's what it seems to be. Now, what does that have to do with that the essence of the wicked is that they want to cause strife and quarrels in a community? Okay, what Levy wants to say is like this. If you want to say that the subject is the comparison of the yosher, the righteous person, and the wicked, then we really have a problem. But if you say what causes people to listen, what causes the public to listen to them, then it works out well. Because by nature, the public wants to listen to a person that will allow them to vent their base emotions. The closer they can allow their base emotions out, they will turn to that person that allows them freedom in their all their desires. But however, the advice of the Yosher runs contrary to their desires, so they're not going to want to listen to him. But people do respect prominence. Prominence in the world of society is wealth and honor. So therefore, if the Yosher has honor, fame, and wealth, so that can counteract what the wicked person says. So he has a chance to deal with the emotions of the public. So it's what the question is, what causes the public to move? Two things. One is their desire for an outlet for their desires, and two, they recognize a certain greatness, and that greatness is dependent on wealth, honor, fame, these type of things they recognize. So if the Yosha has that, then there's a better chance that they'll listen to him so he could counteract the wicked person. So therefore, we've changed the subject from the Yosha to the difference between the Yosha and the wicked. We've changed the subject to what causes the public to accept, to listen to people. It is true that they're both false emotions and they're both irrational to follow. But however, we have no choice. We have to use those emotions for our own benefit. To benefit them, not for our benefit, but for their benefit. The question is that what the tzaddik is saying, or the Yosha is saying, still runs against their emotions. So he says, so we still see they should have a problem. But the fact is that people, even though they have certain desires, they do respect certain things, and they're willing to listen to a person they respect. That's the only thing that could counteract the words of the wicked, the strife of the wicked. You see? That's the only thing if the righteous get prominence. That's the only way to counteract it. If anything can, that's the only thing that can. Right, so Thomas wants to add one point here. And he wants to say that people want to be successful. So when they see that the Yosher is successful, so then they want to have that wealth and honor and fame. So therefore, they're willing to go to the Yosher to get it. So therefore, when they go to get it, so therefore he'll be able to give them advice that will most benefit them. The real advice. And they'll be accepted because they'll feel that that's the way they could get the wealth and the prominence. We just want to clarify what he's talking about. If you're talking about a Nazi or Hitler or Stalin, so then that's a different type of evil. I mean, you go totally by power. You understand? But we're talking about an everyday life, right? There are people that are always inciting arguments by lashon hara, by gossip, and talking about. I mean, you look at any organization, any group of people together. There's always people cutting the other group down or another person down. They're putting people down. They're always causing strife. We're not talking about a Russia that's a Nazi. We're talking about, in other words, Mishlei can't talk to a Nazi. A Nazi is not going to read Mishlei. Okay. We might only bring it in here about a Nazi just for you, so you should see the falseness and not be jealous and not be drawn towards them. But we're talking to everyday people. And everyday people cause terrible strife, and they desire to cause strife, and they're happy when there is strife, and they thrive on it. They thrive on it. And therefore, They talk lashon hara, they gossip, rechilas, whatever. They talk different against people, and they're happy when they cause quarrels. So therefore, the prominence of a righteous person can counteract it. But without that prominence, you can't counteract it.
The question is, why can't we be talking about a truly evil person? And the reason is because of Levi's question of it says rechilus is gossip. Okay, he says, if we're talking about a wicked person, what does it have to do with rechilus, with the gossip? You know what I mean? A real evil person is going to go to war and to destroy you physically. You see? So we're talking about everyday people. You see? Us. Where we gossip and the backstabbing, all these type of things that go on in every group of people. There's always that thing. There's always that strife going on. But they do it behind each other's back, and they cause the, until it really breaks through. And usually the person that says the gossip usually tries to stay out of it, but watches how the people fight. You see? So therefore we're talking about that type of person. Different type of person. Different type of evil. We don't look at that person as evil. Well, it's natural to talk Lashon Hara. Everybody talks Lashon Hara. We have all these rationalizations. But it really is evil. You're destroying a group of people, or you're destroying an individual. And if you destroy an individual and you start quarrel, so the group is destroyed. That's why he talks about the city. The whole group will be destroyed by these type of people. In other words, with all the prominence in the world that the righteous could have, no Nazi is going to listen to him. They're still not going to listen. They will not accept them. We're talking about regular people of the city that are drawn. They can be drawn this way or that way. But a person that's truly evil cannot be drawn by the honor or the prominence of the righteous. And this is a separate point. I mean, it's not what the Pasuk is talking about, but if a Nazi or power, they only respect somebody that has more power. You see? It's just power against power. So if the righteous have more power, they'll bring them down. You can only bring them down by guns. Your prominence of wealth and fame is not going to help you with the Nazi or with Stalin, with these type of people. The only thing that helps is bringing them down. I mean, physically, destroying the wicked. That's it. This pasuk is not talking about that type of situation. The second explanation of the Rabbeinu Yonah is that his prayers, when it says blessings, it means the prayers of the Yosher, of the righteous, are accepted by God, and in that way the city is raised, and the mouth of the righteous, of the wicked, destroy. And then he says, so the comparison, he explains, Rabbeinu Yonah, that the righteous raise the city with the blessing of his mouth, the blessing of the mouth of the righteous, and the wicked destroy the world with their mouth. Okay, the question is like this. There are certain comparisons that do not work. Let's say I want to compare a human to a tree. It doesn't work, because I have to first compare him to an animal, right? And then I could compare animal to growing things, right? So then there are trees that grow and things that live that also grow, you see? When you make a comparison, you can't jump too far. The comparison must be straight. Now over here we're saying that the righteous is praying, right? Which has to do with your relationship to God, and God should help you. Is that correct? While the evil person with his mouth is destroying, you know what I mean? Like I assume that the first answer does not change. At this point, I don't hold that the first answer changes with his rechilus. In other words, you're jumping a step. I could compare, like in the first half, we compared the advice and the way the public accepts it. You understand? So there I could see the difference that it's really, we're talking about the same thing. You see? But over here we're skipping a step. We're dealing with a metaphysical problem of relating to God, and then a practical thing of how the wicked person destroys. You see? So the question is, you're jumping a step here.
So there's no real comparison. You see? There's no real comparison. Two different subjects. One is talking about a metaphysical relationship to God, and through God, God will save the city. And the other half is that the wicked are trying to destroy the city, which has nothing to do with God. So therefore, there's no comparison. The question is, how would you... what is the comparison between the two?
Because of the question, we're going to have to say b'firishom tahares does not mean there. I mean, it could be any evil of the Russia. It's not talking about. It's not emphasizing their achilas. But you have to say the subject is when does God listen and help or destroy? God. In other words, God when He relates this to evil, He could either not intervene and allow the laws of nature, because evil will by nature be destroyed. That's basically, it's at some point. Or He could actually intervene and destroy because of evil. Okay? Now, so what we're saying is that the prayers of the righteous can save a city, and the life of the wicked and what they talk, what they, in other words, how they, they're speaking of evil, whether it's rechilus or their advice or helping people do evil or their plans of evil, it's not clear. The Rabbeinu Yonah is not clear what it means that the mouth of the wicked will destroy. I'm only employing this by virtue of the first half to make a comparison, and we're talking about how two people could affect how God is going to relate to a city. The righteous can cause God to relate to the city through his prayers and to help the city, and the wicked, based on his lifestyle and what he talks about and how he advises and how he speaks and talks, and the evil we're not talking is necessarily a murder. We're talking about the evil of people that live a foolish life and and they give advice that are foolish and stupid, and they cause other people to fail. You see? So they're going to cause one of two things. Either they're going to allow the city to be undermined and destroyed according to the laws of nature, because the wicked... The consequences of the wicked is always some type of destruction, so they could destroy the city, or could God, because of the evil, He could actually intervene to destroy. But however, the prayers of the tzaddik could protect the city via God. You see? So the thing is that there's two ways of affecting God. You could affect God through your prayers, and that could affect the existence of the city. Or you could affect God by the way you live your life and the way you guide people and get the city to live an evil life. So therefore, that would affect how God is going to relate to the city too. The question is, it seems that you could affect God. The answer is you're not affecting God personally, but the way God set up the system in the physical world, you could cause the system to work for you. In other words, God's relationship to the world is based on a system. That system is in Torah, how God relates, when He relates with kindness and goodness, and when He relates with His wrath, right? So now you can use the system to get God to get the system to work for you, because that's how God set up the system. In other words, you're not really affecting God. You can't affect God. But you're affecting the system which God set up. That you can't do. Just like in the laws of nature. If you know the laws of nature, you could making an airplane, which is totally against all the laws of gravity. But if you know the laws of nature, so you can manipulate it. The same thing if you know how God relates to us, the system that God's personal intervention, Hashgacha Pratis, works. So you could work the system for your benefit. In other words, there are two ways of affecting how God's system is going to relate to the city. One is
how the Russia affects the community, right? How he relates to the community. And one is the prayers of the tzaddik. Those are the two ways of affecting God's system.
The question is how, in other words, everybody's asking the question that what the Russia does is affecting the city, but how does it relate to God? Okay? Well, how it relates to God is there's two ways God harms a city or an individual. One is his system causes destruction, like he did to Paro. Right? Like he did to Paro, he destroyed Egypt. He caused Egypt to be destroyed. According to the laws of nature, Egypt would not have been destroyed. God went against the laws of nature and destroyed the city. Okay? Then there's another way. God does not protect the city. He allows it to be destroyed. That is part of God's system. When he allows you to be destroyed within the laws of nature, that's also God's decision. That's part of the system of God's personal relationship, that God will not relate in this situation and allow you to be destroyed. He won't intervene. You see? So therefore, it is still what the Russia is doing is affecting the system of God's personal relationship or hashkacha pratis to the city. In other words, where I say that God does not intervene, meaning that, in other words, the prayer of the righteous will cause the city to be saved, but the way the wicked relates to the city, he could cause it to allow it to go under the laws of nature, allow it, and God will not intervene to save it. That is also a decision of God's decision insofar as the system of God's personal intervention in the physical world. In other words, where you stop God's intervention for good, that's also, so you're stopping his intervention, you're not allowing God's intervention in the laws of nature to do good to the city. You see, you are stopping that. You are preventing it from happening. By your actions, you are preventing, God might decide that, no, the evil is worse and the prayers will not work, so therefore God will not intervene. Maybe you're not on the level to be destroyed. But you prevent God's intervention for saving the city. The system of God's intervention is always there. So either he intervenes or he doesn't intervene. But it's there. Now you could prevent it from happening. The reason that I have to say that the second answer is dealing with God's intervention, because he says openly, by the blessing of the Yosher, is their prayers and their blessings that it's accepted. So therefore, from there I am getting the subject of God's intervention. And the problem is the word intervention is because if he's preventing God from intervening, that is not intervention. So we're changing the term from intervention to you affect the relationship between God and the city. The Russia affects the relationship in one of two ways. Either he causes God to destroy the city, that would be intervention, or he causes that God will not relate to the city and allow the laws of nature to destroy the city. So the wicked infect God's relationship in that way, those two ways. And the tzaddik affects it the other way, that God actually intervenes and protects the city. The question is that what Mishlei basically is talking about the traits of the righteous and the wicked, right? And how it affects, so you get certain consequences, right? So that's exactly what we're saying here, that the traits of the righteous bring about
God's personal intervention and affects the physical world in a very beneficial manner. His righteousness, his lifestyle, affects God's hashgacha one way, while the nature of the wicked affects how God relates to us in an evil way. So we're talking about your very lifestyle, your very personality, and what actions it causes, and how it affects God's relationship to the physical world. In other words, why does God listen to the righteous? Because of his lifestyle, not only his lifestyle, but the way his personality is guided by wisdom. You see? That, and the Rasha, his personality, affects how God relates to us in the opposite manner. In other words, it's not teaching us a new trait. That is correct. It's not teaching us a new trait. It's telling us how their traits affect the Ashkacha process of God's personal intervention. The next question is that the Rabbeinu Yonah gave two answers, and the question is, how do they relate to each other, and what's the subject based on the two answers? How do the two answers relate to each other, and what are the opposites of his two answers? Okay? So that's what we were discussing now. The first answer was that the first answer was is how the success of the tzaddik allows the advice of the tzaddik to work. So it's how the tzaddik and Rasha affect the decision making of the city, right? That was the first answer. The second answer was how their personality affects God's hashgacha, God's personal hashgacha on the city. Okay? Those were the two answers. I'm asking, what is the relationship between the two answers? I find by most of the times by Rishonim, from what I've seen, that whenever they have two answers, the two answers have a relationship and they can be compared. There's two ways that the tzaddik and the rasha affect the city. Okay, there are two ways. One is practical. They affect how the city works, how the city operates, whether they'll operate on righteousness or whether they'll operate on evil, you see? And the second thing is how they affect the God's hashgacha in relationship to the city. In relationship to the city. So therefore, there's two ways how the tzaddik and rasha affect the city. That's the difference in the two answers of the Rabbeinu Yonah. We're verse 12. It says, if somebody insults his friend, then he, chasar lev, has two translations. One is his, he's lacks a mind. He doesn't have a mind. Okay? But that's simple. Okay? And a man of understanding keeps quiet. Let's get it literally. A person that insults his friend lacks heart. Okay? And a man of understanding is quiet. Anyway, so the Rabbeinu Yonah says, he who insults his friend lacks heart, because this is a trait that testifies on his mussar, or lack of. Also testifies on the lack of his mind. It testifies on two things. That he doesn't have any mussar. Mussar means any restraint. You have to be careful here. When the Mishle or mussar talks about restraint, it is not talking about a conscience. I mean, a conscience you're born with. Restraint, musa means the restraint comes from ideas of Torah. From the ideas. Okay? So he says, this testifies on his musa, and it also testifies on his lack of knowledge. Like our sages say, and he brings the proof, and he says, And he brings the proof that also chasar lev, the word chasar lev is also somebody that lacks good traits, midos, and musa. Okay, and he brings a few psukim. Then he says, and the man of understanding is quiet, says, because he understands this about the chasar lev. And it's not an honorable way to answer him. It's not honorable to answer him, because then he'll be equal to him. And secondly, it's sufficient that it is revealed or known that this guy lacks understanding, and that he testified about himself that he is lacks heart. In my own words. Okay? The Rabbeinu Yonah says that the chasar lev literally means lacking heart, has two bad traits. Okay? One bad trait is he doesn't have musar. Okay? In other words, by musar means good traits and or any type of restraint based on understanding. And it also shows chasalev means it shows that he doesn't have understanding. He does things without understanding. Okay, and he says about the man of understanding. He says the man of understanding recognizes this. He understands these. Okay, the question is, why if he answers him, why does that make him bad? Okay? So the question that you have to ask before that, what is wrong with insulting altogether, and how does it show these two traits? Okay? In other words, the lack of midos, the lack of good traits, the lack of musa, and the lack of knowledge. That's the first question that we have to ask. Just a point of information: when the man of understanding is quiet and he doesn't answer back, means he doesn't, he doesn't get into any fights with him. He just lets it go by. In other words, if you insult somebody, bad traits that I understand, he has no control. Like he gets in a moment of anger, he just says whatever's on his mind, just says it out. But why does that show a lack of understanding? I mean, I understand it shows a lack of its bad traits, right? With no restraint. But where does it show that he doesn't have understanding? In other words, they want to say that what's wrong, why it doesn't make sense is because there are certain consequences if you tell somebody off. There are many, many psukkah, many verses in Mishlei that says that the different consequences where you show your anger so the other guy knows to protect himself. He knows that you're an enemy. There's many different things that you show, and there are consequences. Now, if that's what's wrong with it, that's all of Mishlei, that there's many consequences. He seems to be saying something else here, inherently in the person, about something about the situation, something about within the pasuk. If we go back to the man of understanding, he says that the man of understanding says that he understands that the person that insults him lacks the heart, and he shouldn't answer him because then he'll be equal to him. Then he says a second reason. He says the second reason it's enough for him. That he know that this guy revealed that he lacks that he lacks understanding. Now, what is the lack of understanding? He says, and he testifies about himself that he's a chasar lev. You see, in other words, he's testifying about himself that he is a person without good midos and without any restraint.
and he does exactly how he feels, even though it doesn't make sense, and he reveals his basic, he reveals his personality, who he is. A person that reveals bad traits, you understand, and his personality is a fool. You're right. If somebody's going to come out and brag, hey, I'm a fool. You know what I mean? That itself will make him a fool. You see, because he brags about that. You see? So the Chacham, the man of understanding, says, this guy revealed that he is a fool. You see? That he has no traits. That he has no restraint. He has no wisdom. He doesn't know how to operate. And he just shows what a fool he is. Again, the question was, how does insulting somebody show that you're a fool, that you lack any type of understanding, right? Because you're a person that reveals that you have no restraint, no mussar, and no good traits. Like, you're just a person that reacts to different situations, and you just act based on the situation. That's what you're revealing when you insult another person. The question is that we're saying that if a person insults somebody, so it shows his bad traits. But the question is, how is it a bad trait? Right? That's the question. How is it a bad trait that insulting somebody, what is the bad trait about insulting somebody? The thing is, the pasuk doesn't seem to point to the way Rabbeinu Yonah is learning the pasuk. The pasuk doesn't seem to point of why it is insulting, why it is a chasalei. I mean, we've given many reasons why it could be a chasalei. Like, one of the answers was that it's ineffective to get a point across by, in the middle of an argument, you just put the person down. It's ineffective of getting a point across. Somebody else says there's consequences because you just, when you insult, so you just cause anger, and it makes the argument worse. It doesn't benefit anybody. So there's bad results. These are all true. We're not arguing this. But Rabbeinu Yonah seems to be pointing to something that has nothing to do with the essence of a chasar leiv. All he's interested in is the chasar leiv reveals that he doesn't have restraint. He's revealing that he doesn't have any type of restraint and any type of understanding of and he's revealing this when he gets angry and he insults and he gets what's wrong with insulting. So he's revealing that he is a fool, that he's revealing his personality. He's revealing his basic emotions. Now, the question is, what does that have to do with anything? That's a separate question. But all I'm saying is, that's the question that we're going to have to deal with to understand the pasuk. But your question of what's wrong with insulting, that doesn't seem to be that this pasuk is dealing with. It doesn't seem to be dealing with what is wrong, because it's not pointing to anything wrong. He's just saying that since it is wrong, you are revealing you're revealing yourself, and that's a stupid thing. You see, you're revealing a bad part of you. That's all Rabbeinu Yonah is saying. So which means that he seems to be pointing something else in the pasuk, which I don't know yet. So the question is that we're dealing with is, what is revealing about himself, that he reveals himself to others, what does that have to do? Well, what is the pasuk trying to get it to us? Well, what is the point that he's trying to get across to us? In other words, basically, we don't know what the pasuk is talking about. That's where we're at. Another question is that the pasuk is funny because the pasuk is saying how the second guy should react to the first guy. If somebody insults you, so then you should be quiet, right? So he's telling them how to react to the first one. He's not comparing the first one to the second one. I mean, we would think his usual style is to compare one to the other,
where's the comparison? There's no comparison. He's not comparing a person that insults and a person that doesn't insult. He's telling you advice. He says, if a person insults you, then don't answer him. Advice. So what's the comparison? Rachel wants to say like this, that the person that is insulting is, it doesn't he's only expressing his own feelings, okay? He's only expressing his own feelings, and since he's expressing his own feelings, it doesn't reflect anything about the man, the Ishtavunos, the man of understanding. So if you're a man of understanding, you realize that this guy is insulting you, but it's not really about me. It's really about the guy that is doing the insulting. Right? So therefore, he should not answer. Is that correct? Therefore, he should not answer. Because he's talking, you're reflecting his own self, and therefore it is not worth answering him because it has nothing to do with me. Okay? That is a very true idea. That idea is absolutely true. Okay? And it's a good idea. And it will help us soon. Okay, it will help us a little better soon. The only thing is, the only question I have is that not the Rabbeinu Yonah. Without the Rabbeinu Yonah, I would have said that could be the interpretation of the pasuk. That definitely could be an interpretation of the pasuk without the Rabbeinu Yonah. But if we're going to go according to the Rabbeinu Yonah says that I have to understand that this guy, that I'm equal to the guy. That if I answer him, I'm equal to the guy. It's not that I have nothing to learn from him, but I'm equal to him, and the guy is a jerk. The guy is a jerk. I mean, he's acting like a jerk. He has no mind. He has no understanding. You understand? So that's it. I mean, it seems to be pointing to something else. I mean, without the Rabbeinu Yonah, what you're saying is 100% true. I would learn the pasuk that way. I mean, for the words of the pasuk, it could definitely fit in that explanation. I'm just saying it's not the Rabbeinu Yonah.
All right.
The way the Rabbeinu Yonah says, you should not look at it insofar as you are concerned what you could get out of it, what you could benefit, or about the man of understanding himself. He says the man of understanding just looks at this guy, that this guy is a fool. And he's revealing the fact that he's a fool. That's all. So he looks down on the guy. So that is not what, you know, I mean, that the Rabbeinu Yonah seems to be pointing to something else, totally differently, that I look down on this guy. All right, basically what we're talking about is a person that, see, the type of person we're talking about is a regular, the man of understanding is a regular person. He has desires. He has a desire if somebody insults him to insult back. It's not like a person that has humility, like Moshe Rabbeinu, you insult him, he doesn't even know what you're talking about. Like, it doesn't affect him at all. It just doesn't affect him. That's humility. He doesn't have any ego that he's affected. We're talking about a person that still has an ego, and if you insult him, he feels the insult, right? Now, not to answer back, there's two ways of not answering back. One is the conscience. But the conscience is just your own emotion. It could work, it could not work. What we're saying is that you should use chachma to prevent yourself from answering. It says the two arguments that will prevent you from answering is that then I am equal to him. Whatever is wrong in expressing your emotions, it does not make a difference if you instigated it or you express it by being instigated. You see? You are expressing your emotion. Okay? And therefore, I have no control and I am just equal to him. So therefore, I don't want to be equal to him. So therefore, that argument, that's one argument that stops me. The second argument that stops me is, when I want to insult somebody, what do I want to accomplish? I want to put the person down. But I have to say that the person is already put down. You see? The person is already put down. Why? Because he revealed that he's a moron. He revealed that the guy is a fool. But do you understand the guy that did the insulting? So therefore, since he revealed it, there's nothing more for me to do. But you have to understand that to reach this level, even this level of under of being the man of understanding, see, when you're attacked, there's a desire that you hit the guy back. You see? You have to think through, when you do that act, what do you want to accomplish? When you do that act, what do you want to accomplish? It's not just, you want to put, you want to make a fool of the guy. You want to insult him, show him that something is, that the guy is a fool, that the guy doesn't, something wrong with him. You see? You have already accomplished that in your mind by recognizing that that's exactly what he did, and there's nothing more for you to do. You see what I mean? It's a certain level of understanding that if that idea, these two ideas, it's not just that you just think through the idea and it happens. Is you have to go over these ideas again until the idea stops you, not your conscience. A conscience is not a person of understanding. It is the understanding that stops you and prevents you from carrying out this act. You see? That is the man of understanding. The question is that there are two things. There is understanding that the guy put himself down. But many times when you're insulted, is you want to hurt the person. You want the guy to feel bad. The person, and that you perceive him, you want him to know that you perceive him as a fool. As a person that has no understanding, nothing. So you put him down. So therefore, this is the question is that this is not satisfying because you don't have that aspect. You only have the aspect that you're aware that the guy made a fool of himself. But the guy that made a fool of himself doesn't realize that. So it's not totally satisfying. That is the question. The answer to that is there. The Rabbeinu Yonah gives two arguments. The first argument would definitely take care of that. The reason why I shouldn't answer him, whatever I want to accomplish, is because then I'm equal to him. You see, the only thing that's left for me, the only thing, you're right. I don't have an outlet for my vengeance. That feeling of vengeance that I want the guy to feel hurt. I don't have an outlet. That was stopped because then it comes out I'm not a man of mitzvah. I don't have good traits. You see? So that's the first answer that stops it. But the second answer says there is something not equal to that, but it is at least that you know that the guy in reality did insult himself. The first half restrains you from hurting the guy, from answering back. The second answer, at least there's some satisfaction in the fact that the guy did make a fool of himself, even though he does not know it. The question is that the purpose of Mishlei is to help you reach a certain level of perfection. Okay? So here you just, you have to look down on a person, you know, and like this is not, you understand, this is like you're still looking down on a person. Like I said, before, there is a certain development and you must start where you are. Okay? And the first step is being a chacham, a wise person. Now, either your conscience is going to stop you or your wisdom is going to stop you. You do not have humility. The person that's years later, you get humility. You understand? Where somebody insults you, it will not affect you. But most human beings, when they are insulted, put down, they are affected. Now, either you control yourself through guilt, through conscience, or there's some rational reason that should prevent me. You see? So therefore, we're talking, that's why Musar over here is a chacha. It must come, your actions must be based on wisdom, and the wisdom has to affect who you are now. I can't live like Moshe Rabbeinu. I must live who I am now. The problem is that people want to see themselves on a very high level. That is a big error. And if you look at yourself like, I have no ego and I'm not going to answer back
because that's the right thing to do. You understand? That is, first of all, it doesn't work. And secondly, you're putting yourself on a level that you're not. You must work on your level. The level of the person in this pasuk is a person that is insulted. And he needs chachma, he needs wisdom to stop him, not his conscience. If he was a person that was had humility means that if you insult him, his ego is not bothered. He doesn't have an ego to be bothered. So therefore, he doesn't have to do anything. We're talking about that chachma, wisdom itself, stops you from answering. And you must understand that this is who you are. But if you prevent yourself through the conscience, then you're not a chacham. It's true, you're not insulting, and you fulfill a mitzvah from the halacha. But the thing is, it's not the book of Mishlei. The book of Mishlei is that you're guided through wisdom, and you have to know who and what you are, how to be guided. Then it's up to recognize who and what you are. That's a certain level of humility. And that it's chachma, and it's a certain level of humility. I recognize that I'm on this level, and I want to answer the guy, and I must have a good answer to answer the guy. You see? And this is the only way that you can do it. That's the Rabbeinu Yonah says. Now the question is, what is the subject? Okay? Now the opposites here is really we have two sides of the person. It's really not, the comparison is not between the person that insults and the person that is being insulted. The comparison is how to deal with when somebody insults you, right? And there's two ways of dealing with it. One is allowing your emotions freedom, or preventing your emotions from having an outlet through wisdom. You see? It's the same type of opposite as a shadow. What is a shadow? Definition of a shadow is the light is covered. When you stop the light from coming through, that becomes a shadow. Now the same thing here, you are stopping the insult from coming through wisdom. Through this wisdom, you're stopping it from coming through. And now the question is when this type of opposites, what is the subject? Could you say the subject by light, that the subject is light or lack thereof? But then you don't have the two things. You should have something else there. And the same thing here, we just don't know what the subject of the opposites are. But the nature of the opposites is that there's a where, like for instance, a blind person is he lacks eyes. But an owl is not lacking eyes. An owl was created that way. He didn't lose his sight. It's not the absence of sight that he can't see. You understand? So, but what? I am correct. It is not an owl. An owl can't see. But it is a bat that cannot see. Okay, thank you for that correction. When the Rabbeinu Yonah mentions about the chasar lev, he only mentions the two qualities which the Ishtavunos understand. You see, so he's setting up the Ishtavunos. Doesn't seem to be a comparison between the two. It seems to be that he's setting up an argument for the Ishtavunos, you see? And so therefore, when he's setting up, all you could say is that he has a desire, and he prevents the desire through knowledge. Now, how do you define the subject in this type of opposites? I leave that to the listener of this tape. Again, the question is that the pasuk is not telling us what's wrong with answering. This pasuk is not telling us what's wrong with giving an answer back. This pasuk is accepting the premise that there is something wrong in answering back. Okay? And it's only talking to your, it's only helping the Ishtavunos, the man of understanding, how to deal with his own emotions. That's all it's teaching us. That is beyond the scope to know what is wrong. I mean, you gave answers before which were good answers, but it's beyond the scope of this pasuk to define what is wrong with being a chasar lev, with insulting somebody. What is really wrong with that? That is beyond the scope of this pasuk. The first half is only setting up the situation to tell us how the ishtavunos should act in such a situation. It's setting up the situation. It's not making a comparison. In other words, this is a certain level of a person that the idea is so real to him that it stops him from his emotions from doing something, that it stops his emotions from operating, prevents his emotions from operating based on chachma. That's why this type of process belongs in Mishlei, because we're dealing with where chachma stops you from acting, not your conscience, you see. But it's the chachma itself. We're on verse 13, and it says, he who carries rachel, rachilas is where somebody tells you something privately or secretly as a secret, and then you tell it over to others. So this person that carries rachilas, tail bearing, he will reveal secrets. And a person that his spirit is trustworthy, he will cover the thing. Now, we don't know what the thing is yet. Okay, we assume the thing is that he will keep the secret. Okay? But he doesn't actually say that. Okay? Now, the Rabbeinu Yonah says, if you see a person that's a rachel, in other words, he carries these stories, and he instigates in things of degradation and anger, in other words, that he hears about people, you should know that he will reveal a secret, and don't trust him with your secrets, and don't reveal your secrets to him, and don't trust him, because since he reveals things, he gives over things that shouldn't be revealed, he reveals them. And he is not; he does not guard his spirit from rechilas, right? He allows his natural tendency towards rechilas to come out. Then he will not guard from keeping secrets. And on the other side, the Rabbeinu Yonah says, he who is a trustworthy spirit, he will cover the thing. And he says, he gives a reason for this. Because keeping a secret is not only to the Neman Ruach, to the trustworthy spirit. The trustworthy spirit means the person, trustworthy person that has a spirit of trust. And he who is trustworthy in spirit, he will cover the thing, anything that is not fitting to be revealed, even though the person that said it doesn't cover it up. In other words, let's say I would say something, it's not a secret, you see? And and he will not reveal the rechilas, okay? So according to the Rabbeinu Yonah, there seems to be three types of people. The first one is a person that tells over anything he hears from anybody. The second one, he says, because keeping a secret is not only to the trustworthy spirit, which means that there is another person that keeps a secret. If you tell him to keep a secret, he will keep the secret. And then there's the Neman Ruach, that he will not reveal anything that he thinks should be kept a secret, even though the person himself will not keep it. You see? He goes by the subject and not based on the person. The question is that the first side of the pasuk seems to be repetitive. He who carries rechilas, in other words, reveals secrets. So, of course, I mean, that's
say it's repeating the same thing. So what is he saying? According to the Rabbeinu Yonah, he's saying like this. If you say somebody that tells Rechilas, then you should know he is the type of person that even if he would say, I'll keep a secret, cannot keep a secret. That's the second here. He will reveal secrets even if you tell him it's a secret. And he'll agree that it is a secret, and he'll tell you that he won't tell you, but he can't help himself, he will tell. Even if he has all intentions not to tell the secret, he will tell the secret. That's his nature. He can't help himself. That's the first person. Rechilas is somebody, Rechilas is somebody that when he hears anything about anybody else, if it's like he says, like the Rabbeinu Yonah says, that he carries with that instigates and degrades and causes quarrels and arguments. Anything that he hears, he carries. It's not only secrets, he carries everything that causes, he instigates people with telling him over things. It's not only secrets, it's everything. Now, therefore, let's say a guy is your friend, but he has that problem. There are people that way, right? So the thing is, you should know that you can't trust him with a secret, even though he might be a friend, and with all intentions, he would be, he wants to keep the secret, but he can't. Well, the question is that it's obvious, okay? That it's so obvious that there's such a thing, certainly so. The answer is that, first of all, it's not obvious to everybody. A lot of people don't even think this way. And secondly, many times if you have somebody you want to talk over things, so you blind yourself to these facts, to this information. Well, he's my friend. He won't talk about me. So it's helping you guard against your own emotions. That, in other words, you have to understand, Mishlei sometimes tells you something which is new that you wouldn't know on your own. Or he'll tell you things which are opposite your emotions. So therefore, that's why he tells you. So either it's something that people wouldn't think of, or you tell them over because your emotions, some people you really want to tell something, and you say, keep a secret. He says, yeah, and you trust them. But he says, you can't trust such a person. A rachel is a person that tells stories. Anything that causes, incites anger and incites quarrels, okay? That's what he, and incites degradation about people. Maybe that you should look down and insults people. So that is Rechilas, okay? It is not fictitious, it could be true, it could be anything he hears, he tells over, he doesn't check it through. And the question is, the first question that we're asking is, why is Rabbeinu Yonah bringing the second guy? It's not part of the pasuk. And secondly, if we're dealing with three guys, what's the difference between the three guys? We're just going over the facts of the three guys, okay? The first guy tells anything that incites arguments. The second guy will not tell secrets, okay? The third guy will decide what to tell and what not to tell. The first guy has an impulse to speak. It's a natural impulse. Most people have this impulse to tell over secrets. And sometimes it's a matter, like Rabbeinu Yonah says, it's a matter of inciting arguments, which in fact it does. Sometimes the desire is to be the first one to tell a secret. You know what I mean? There could be different desires here. But basically it does incite fights. Okay? The second person, I would say, is halachic person. He keeps halacha. Halacha, I'm not allowed to. So he goes according to the categories of halacha, what I'm not allowed to speak about. You see? Now, I will not, in other words, you might say, well, what about a person? There's certain people that don't gossip based on certain conscience, certain feelings. And that we said yesterday that we don't make decisions based on the conscience. Conscience could be wrong. We must make sense. So halacha makes sense. So therefore, that's a reason to invoke the halacha, invokes the conscience to stop when it's against halacha. So therefore, he keeps. He's the second type of guy. The third guy has undid his desire for speaking it altogether. But where he does speak, he defines clearly what should be kept a secret and what not kept a secret. In other words, like this. In my view, I'm not sure, but let's say you were having a birthday party and a surprise party, and you would tell this guy that there's a surprise party and don't tell anybody. He would have a hard time keeping the secret because it doesn't fit into his category of secrets. Secrets to him is where it hurts people or where it causes, you know, really harm. Like we said, rechilas, that would cause really harm. So he keeps secrets where it hurts people based on justice and chesed and kindness, you understand? But not just an ordinary secret. Now, whether you could keep it or not, because it doesn't fit into the category of his categories of secrets. In other words, you're creating a category of secret. It might not be really a category of secret in his mind. So it might be difficult for him to keep it. I do not know. But just based on my understanding of the pasuk, I could assume for him it would be difficult. But however, he bases it on categories, and any information he gets, it is immediately categorized based on logic, not on the emotion. It goes straight to the mind. The first person cannot, he just doesn't think. He just allows his impulse total freedom. The second person keeps halacha, but he has the desire. He has the desire. And the third person is under desire, and he creates a system of what is the nature of a secret and what is not the nature of a secret. Well, the question is, where do I get the second guy from that it's based on halacha? Because it says, because there are other people that he says, not ki ein hester hasod bilti lenemani ruach. It's not only to the trustworthy spirit of keeping a secret, which means there's another person. The only other person I know of is that he just controls himself based on halacha. That's the only possibility. That is the only possibility. There's no other. In other words, I can't give an explanation that has two logical possibilities, and none of them are in the Rabbeinu Yonah. So then I can't say, you understand? Or I'd have to say, my view is, not the Rabbeinu Yonah. But if there's no other possibility, then that's what the Rabbeinu Yonah is saying. And the third one, he says, he doesn't say anything that doesn't deserve to be revealed. It has nothing to do with secrets. That's why he says the terminology is that, the terminology, he hides the matter. The Neman Ruach, the trustworthy spirit, hides the matter. What do you mean he hides the matter? He just said he hides the secret. Or he hides the Rechilas. Well, he doesn't reveal Rechilas. Should say something like that. But why does it say he hides the matter? That is the way the Rabbeinu Yonah is learning. Again, the question is, there's certain type of personalities that do not keep secrets. I mean, that keep secrets, that do keep secrets. There's certain personalities. And those people you could trust. The only reason why I don't think the Rabbeinu Yonah is talking about him is because we would not acknowledge person that does something without knowledge. Because if he does something without knowledge, then what he does, the probability of him carrying it to an extreme is highly probable. You need chachma to make sure you do not carry a thing to an extreme. And therefore, you must be guided to control the emotion. The only way that we hold that you deal with the emotion is by clear-cut categories of the mind, where the mind defines clearly the idea. It's true practically that you can tell a person, that type of person, a secret. But however, Mishlei is talking about a chacham. A chacham, we're talking about where it's based on an idea, you see? Now, even though he doesn't mention the middle person, since we're talking about categories of either you are doing it right or you're doing it incorrectly, the second person he's saying is doing something correctly. He's doing something correctly, then in other words, let's say, for instance, an evil person. There are people that will not talk lashon hara about an evil person. And we know that they're obligated to talk about and to publicize that evil person, that he's evil and he could do harm to you, and you should talk about him. So you see that many times the person that keeps a secret will go too far. We cannot say that that is a good thing. even though sometimes it will be good. But since he can't make distinctions where it is good and where it's not good, therefore he doesn't belong in the Mishlei. The question is, what is the subject here? The subject is how to relate to Rechilus. There are three ways of relating to Rechilus. Either you speak it, or you keep it halachically, you don't do it, or based on the conscience, you don't do it. Okay? Or the third one, you decide what should be spoken about, what should not be spoken about in general, and based on the subject, you either speak about it or don't speak about it. That is what the pasuk is talking about. The question that's asked, why is the middle guy not mentioned? The answer is the reason why the middle guy is not mentioned because he's not perfected. Even if he does it for halacha, he's not a perfected person based on Mishlei. Mishlei deals with the subject of perfecting the nature of yourself, perfecting your soul, perfecting who you are, change who you are. So therefore it does not mention the middle one, it just mentions the two opposites. Okay? But the Rabbeinu Yom implies it. Okay? That's why the middle one is not mentioned. Question is, what's the difference between the first one and the middle one? How come the first one is mentioned and the middle one is not? Because the first one is, it shows the evil. I have to compare the evil way of doing things and the perfected person that's doing things. But the middle way here is, I might do it because of halacha or my conscience, which is not perfected either way. Okay? So it's not perfected either way. So therefore it's not mentioned here. And we said the trustworthy person, what we added is, a trustworthy person doesn't do with loyalty to the person, but it was what is objectively correct to do. Whatever is objectively correct to do, that's what he does. It has nothing to do with his relationship to the person. Therefore you could truly trust that person because he lives totally an objective life. It's totally guided by intelligence, that he has a clear definition in his mind what is allowed to be spoken and what is not allowed to be spoken. And also it was mentioned that what I said before, that I don't know if he'll keep a secret about a party. So somebody mentioned in his category, if somebody wants a secret, somebody mentioned that should be part of his category in the mind, that he would not tell somebody, if somebody wants to keep a secret, he would not do that. The reason why I'm in doubt is because his categories is based on good and evil, right or wrong. In the area of justice, this personal desire, since it's not loyal to the person, but it has to do with the logical categories, so it is possible, I still don't know, you know what I mean? I'm still unsure. I understand the other side, but I'm still not sure how this type of a person operates.